Bible says that we're made in the image of God, Genesis 1:27. In the image of God, He created both male and female. What does that mean? That's a common term and language we use around here and in churches. But what does it mean to be made in the image of God? Well, it means a lot. And this is not a sermon on what it means to be made in the image of God. But I will say it means that God made us to reflect Him, to reveal Him. We're His image. We reflect and reveal Him and also represent Him. He gave us dominion over the entire earth. That's all in Genesis 1. So we reflect, we reveal, and we represent God. But being made in the image of God also means that we're rational creatures, emotional creatures, that we're spiritual creatures, that we were made to know God and to know one another. Like God, we're persons. We're persons who can think, feel, know, love, create, and speak. And speak. We're made in the image of a speaking God, and so we speak. One of the external evidences that we're like God in ways unlike the animals is that we're speaking creatures. We're made to speak to God, and we're made to speak to one another. This ability to speak enables us to live in relationship with God and with others. This means that our lives are literally built on words. Our lives are built on words. Words are what bring us together. Words are what bring us to God. Words are what create connection between friends and spouses and children. Words are what create connection with our God. Words are how we're known, and words are how we know others. One writer says it this way. They say, community depends on communication. Community depends on communication, upon information and attitudes shared in common. End quote. To say it another way, words can make or break our relationships. Words can make or break our communities. Community depends on communication. So words make or break communities, whether a community of a marriage, a community in a home among children, your community at school, your community at work, your community at church, your community, wherever you are, is made or broken by words. Words have an awesome God-given power to bring people together or drive people apart. This is what Proverbs 18:21 says. This is our launch pad for the morning. We're going to be all over Proverbs, more of a topical sermon, though in Proverbs. 18:21 says this, death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruits. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Those who love it will eat its fruits. What this text says, and what we're going to see all over Proverbs this morning, what the main point of this sermon is, words bring life or death. Words bring life or death. That's where we're going. Words bring life or death. I'm going to give you three headings, though, to organize our material. Here's what we'll see this morning. We'll see that words hurt, words heal, and words reveal. Words hurt, words heal, and words reveal. Again, Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Words hurt, words heal, words reveal. Number one, let's consider the power of words to hurt. The power of words to hurt.
Isn't it a tragedy that all of us, myself included, have used words, have used a God-given instrument meant to bring people together to hurt the people closest to us? Isn't it a tragedy that our words have brought death rather than life?
Let me be clear at the beginning of this point, so there's no mistaking what I'm trying to say. Using our words to harm is sin. Using our words to harm is sin. One of the clearest evidences of the fallenness of mankind is that we don't have to teach our children how to do this. We're born hardwired and ready to use our words to hurt each other. Parents, did you teach your kids how to say mean things? Did you say, "Hey, little Johnny, Sally, here's what we're going to learn today. We're going to learn how to be mean to each other. Here's what you say when you're angry. Say this." No, none of us got that lesson. But somehow we intuitively know how to do this, because this is evidence of our fallenness and sin. You may say, "You know, John, I don't really care what people say. You know, I know who I am. I'm not affected by any of that. I just want to say, yes, you are." You know the children's saying, right? "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will what? Will never hurt me." That's unambiguously false. The most painful moments of your life and mine most likely involved someone close to you saying something incredibly hurtful. And you may even be thinking of it right now. You may remember the words and hear them bouncing in your head even now. Words that touched the deepest part of you and have stuck with you over decades. When this happens, Old Testament scholar Derek Kidner, he says, "What is done to you is of little account beside what is done in you." Words have tremendous power to penetrate the inner recesses of our hearts and leave scars that wound us for life and even start to shape our identities. What do I mean? Do you ever battle with thoughts that go something like this? "Why am I so stupid? Why am I so sensitive? Man, I'm worse than my brother. I'm worse than my sister. I'm just like my dad. I'm just like my mom. Why am I so annoying?" Do you battle with those kind of... Are those thoughts on a repeat track in your head? I wonder when you first heard them. Those thoughts came from somewhere. They most likely came from someone very close to you. And they left their mark, didn't they? Do you see what Proverbs 18:21 is saying? "Death and life are in the power of the tongue." Do you see that? Words hurt. What kind of words hurt? What kind of words hurt? Well, Proverbs has a lot to say about the kinds of words that hurt. The main thing you find as you look through the Proverbs, and I'm not going to even try to even mention all the Proverbs about our words. But one of the main themes is basically this idea of restraint. That it's our inability to restrain our words that ends up hurting people. So for example, Proverbs 12:18, this is one of the clearest texts, I think. Proverbs 12:18, "There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing." There's one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. So unrestrained or rash words are like getting poked or stabbed with a sword. It's almost this picture of someone who takes out their sword, and maybe they don't even intend to stab anybody, but they take out their sword and they're waving it around
indiscriminately and inadvertently someone gets hurt because they couldn't keep the sword in the thing. What's the thing? The scabbard. I wanted to say scabbard, but I didn't want to sound stupid. There I am, worried about my words. We take the sword out and we wave it around indiscriminately, and then we wonder why people got hurt around us because we were speaking rashly instead of with restraint. Solomon goes on to say, when words are many, transgression is not lacking, but whoever restrains his words or his lips is prudent. An unchecked flow of words, just by the simple law of averages, will often hurt people. The more we speak, the more and greater chance we will sin with our words. The idea isn't that we should just shut up and never speak. That's not the idea. The idea is to be restrained, to watch carefully what's coming out of our lips. Not just to stop talking, but to watch carefully how we're using the sword. This is why Solomon also goes on to say it's better for the fool just to remain silent. Even a fool, this is 17:28, even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. Now, this is what we all did in school, isn't it? In the classes where we had no idea what the teacher was talking about, we just sat there and we're like, yeah, yeah. Never raise your hand, right? Don't even try to answer a question. We're like, yeah. We don't want to open our mouths in those classes, do we? You know, kind of pretending that we know what's going on, lest we open our mouths and remove all doubt. Restraint is one of the main themes in Proverbs about hurtful words. Our inability to restrain them, to keep them in. You see, God made a universe that works by cause and effect, which means in every area of life, there are certain things that happen when we do things. If you do this, certain things will flow. And in Proverbs, we see this all over the place. Proverbs was written for a world governed by cause and effect. Certain things happen when we don't restrain our words. Proverbs 10, you can look at a few of these Proverbs with me. I'm going to read four of them. In Proverbs 10, we see some of these consequences of our hurtful words. Proverbs 10, we'll do 13, 14, 21, and 31. Proverbs 10:13, on the lips of him who has understanding, wisdom is found, but a rod is for the back of him who lacks sense. 14, the wise lay up knowledge, but the mouth of a fool brings ruin near. 21, the lips of the righteous feed many, but fools die for lack of sense. 31, the mouth of the righteous brings forth wisdom, but the perverse tongue will be cut off. So these consequences can be summarized like this. The consequences of using unrestrained words is self-destruction. That's what all this language means. In 13, the rod is further back, brings ruin near. 14, 21, dies for lack of sense. 31, the perverse tongue will be cut off. It's self-destruction. If you speak this way, you're destroying yourself. You're hurting yourself. Unrestrained words are hurtful words. One of the main casualties of unrestrained words is ourselves. You have to understand this, brothers and sisters. When we use hurtful words, we're not just hurting others, we're hurting ourselves. One commentator says, a fool's tongue is long enough to cut his own throat. The wise person, on the other hand, Solomon says, doesn't shoot from the hip with their words. Rather, they use their words carefully, not rashly. In so doing, they keep from injuring themselves and others. David Hubbard, he's dead now. He was a longtime seminary seminary president. Many decades he led a seminary out on the West Coast, and he taught Old Testament. He wrote a commentary on Proverbs, and as I was reading his commentary this week, he did this little thing where he actually talked, he applied a lot of this to his experience as a leader
at his institution. And I think his words are instructive for any of us who lead in any way, whether we're leading at home or leading at work or leading wherever. His words are instructive for us on how to apply some of these things that I'm talking about. Listen to what Dr. Hubbard says. He says, in sizing up people as potential participants, whether as administrators or trustees, I carefully observed their patterns of speech. Obviously, what they said needed to make sense, but I watched for much more than that. Did they wait their turn? Did they step on the lines of others? Did they have a need for the last word? Did they try to top everyone else's stories? Did they sound off in their areas of incompetence? Could they say, I don't know? Did they repeat themselves badly and wander aimlessly through their subject matter? Persons with these and other verbal liabilities are not sensitive enough, he says, not succinct enough, not modest enough, and not gracious enough to work well with others. They waste time, hurt feelings, and shatter morale. They, with the rest of us, need to sit longer at the wise teacher's feet and learn that restraint in communication is essential to prudent speech. End quote. Do you see what Dr. Hubbard's saying? When we're indiscriminate with our words, it comes back to hurt us. It might be through losing a job. It might be through losing connection with your spouse. We might lose credibility or respect in the various communities we find ourselves in. Our harmful words harm ourselves first. Our harmful words come back and harm us. But our harmful words also obviously hurt others around us. So one of the things that happens when we use our words indiscriminately, Proverbs says, we end up separating people that should be friends. We hurt people. We separate them. We divide things that should be together, people that should be together. Proverbs 16:28. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Or Proverbs 17:9, he who repeats a matter separates close friends. So our words, if they're used wrongly, separate people who should be together. They separate friends. They separate close friends. People who should be close and growing together in unity and intimacy can be separated with harmful words. Pastor Alistair Begg says it this way. He says, by words we can destroy our neighbor, crush the feelings of a friend, set fire to relationships between people. One wrong word may spoil a person's character, smear a person's reputation, mar the usefulness of someone's life for a very long time as a result of the use of words to harm. End quote. A dishonest man spreads strife, and a whisperer separates close friends. Harmful words separate people who should be together. That word there in 16:28 for whisperer, the NIV translates it as gossip. A gossip separates close friends. A gossip separates people who should be together. Well, what's gossip? This is tricky because it's really subtle. And it's one of those sins that we don't talk about enough. It's easy to look outside ourselves and look out into the culture. Like, well, yeah, oh yeah, those people, that's obviously bad and wrong. You know, but then there's gossip. And a lot of times we're doing it and we don't even know we're doing it. What is it? Well, the simplest way I could define it would be this. Gossip is saying things about people rather than to people. Saying things about people rather than to people. If you won't say something to a person, then you probably shouldn't say it about the person. Using words to make ourselves look better, because that's what we're doing. When we're gossiping, we're basically saying, look, have you heard about this person? Because we want ourselves to look better than that person. It's self-righteousness. We want to tear down someone else so that we look better. But when we do that, we're destroying the unity of a community. We're separating close friends. It's therefore up to the community to address this when it happens rather than just let it happen. Brothers and sisters in Christ, church members should not tolerate gossip about other church members. Church members should not tolerate gossip about other church members. If you do, here's what will happen. If you do, it'll only come back to hurt you. Because if someone gossips to you, they'll gossip about you. So one of the ways we serve and encourage one another is say, hey, brother, hey, sister, I wonder if you should just be talking to them about that. I'm not sure I need to know that. Have you talked to them? The philosopher Pascal said, quote, I lay it as a fact that if all men knew what others say of them, there would not be four friends in the world. Isn't that true? Why? Because of Proverbs, gossip separates people that should be together. It separates close friends. There's this story about a lady who comes to her pastor and confesses to him how she's been spreading this malicious rumor around their town. She feels really bad about it. She asks for his help. So he says, okay, here's what you need to do. I want you to take a bag of chicken feathers. Have y'all heard this story? I want you to take a bag of chicken feathers, and I want you to take it and put some feathers on every doorstep around town. So she goes and she does it. She comes back to her pastor. She says, okay, I did it. I put all the chicken feathers out there at every doorstep in town. He says, okay, now I want you to go back and pick up all the chicken feathers and put them back in the bag. The lady says, well, hold on. Ever since I've come back, the wind has been blowing, so those feathers are all over town. And the pastor says, yes, they are, and so are your words. You can be forgiven, he says, but you can't get those words back. Brothers and sisters, do you see how our words destroy the unity of a community? How they hurt? They hurt ourselves, and then they hurt others. Those we're supposed to be close with. With our words, as Jacob read from James 3, with our words we bless God and then curse people made in His image by tearing them down. With unrestrained words, we pierce people's heart like a dagger. Proverbs 18:21, death and life are in the power of the tongue. Our words hurt. Now, if that weren't cheery enough, let's move on. Number two. Our words can do much more than hurt. Our words can also heal. What's the last bit there in Proverbs 18:21? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. You can kill or resurrect through your words. Our words have the power to heal. Also, Proverbs 12:18, I've already read it. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. The tongue of the wise brings healing. Wise people speak words that heal rather than hurt. Solomon elsewhere talks about the words of the wise as being a fountain of life or being the tree of life. They have these words that you're just drawn into because you find water there. You find growth. You find nourishment. You find life. They're a fountain. They're a tree. You want to live there. What are healing words? What do these words look like? Well, Proverbs gives us many things. I'll give you four. Healing words are at least these four things. Healing words first are honest words. Honest words. Kings take pleasure in honest lips. 16:13. Now, sometimes we say when we're gossiping, well, I'm just being honest. But the motive is to tear down, not to build up. And sometimes we do need to say hard things to our brothers and sisters, our friends. And sometimes honesty hurts, doesn't it? John, hold on. You're saying this is all about healing. So sometimes, though, and you know, you probably experienced this, someone says something to you and it hurt and you didn't like it, but you knew deep down, you knew immediately that they were right. I'm looking at Austin McKillop right now. I just had this memory. You said something to me, brother, years ago. You were like, John, every time you talk to me, I feel like it's always criticism. I was like, inside, I'm like, oh, no, he didn't. And he's exactly right. He's exactly right. And I needed to learn and grow how to shepherd my brother with encouragement. Honest words are healing words. And they do hurt sometimes. That hurt must be a result of love, a desire to potentially wound in order to heal. Solomon says it this way in 27:5-6. Better is open rebuke than hidden love. Faithful are the wounds of a friend. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. His father, David, says it this way in Psalm 141. Let a righteous person strike me. It is a kindness. Let him rebuke me. It is oil for my head. Let not my head refuse it. Sometimes, friends, the most loving thing we can do is tell someone something they don't want to hear. The point of this is to tell them, not to tell someone else about them. It takes tremendous courage to do this. But if it's driven by love, it can bring healing. Why? Because we're blind. We're living like this. That's the thing about blind spots. You can't see them. But a friend comes along and says, hey, have you considered this thing over here? And the blinder comes off. And you're like, oh my goodness. It doesn't feel good, but in the long run, if you're teachable, like we talked about last week, if you're willing to receive correction, you grow and your relationships heal and deepen and mature. Honest words. Now, when we do this, we need to do this in a certain way. So the next thing would be healing words are calm words. Healing words are honest, and secondly, they're calm. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Proverbs 15:1. A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Calm words diffuse explosive situations. Rather than pouring gas on a fire by snapping back with harsh and defensive words, calm and gentle words pour water on that fire. I wonder if you've ever been in an argument with someone or a heated discussion, and you said something like, just calm down. Does that work? Has that ever worked for you guys? Just calm down. Just chill out. That's not the kind of calming words I'm talking about. Instead, what if you did something like this? What if instead of saying calm down, you said something like, I can tell you're upset right now, and I love you, and I want us to sort this out. Let's circle back around to this later, maybe tonight after the kids go to bed. Let's circle back to this, because I really want to talk about this, but this probably isn't the best time. Do you see the difference? A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Next, healing words are timely words. So honest words, calm words, timely, timely. 15:23, to make an apt answer is a joy to a man, and a word in season, how good it is. A word in season, how good it is. Have you ever said the right thing, even in the right way, but at the wrong time? Susie and I have this unofficial rule where we try hard not to have hard conversations after 10 p.m. Why? Because we're exhausted and we're not thinking as clearly as we need to be. If we don't know when a good time to talk to someone about something is, you can say something like, hey, I wonder if we could talk about X, Y, or Z sometime soon. When would be a good time for us to talk about this? Healing words are timely words. In other words, healing words aren't, again, this goes back to the restraint things. Healing words don't usually happen when we just say what's on our mind in the moment. They wait. Wait for the proper time. And it's hard to wait. It's hard to wait. Especially if you're a verbal processor like me. So healing words are honest, they're calm, they're timely. But fourthly, finally, they're good words. They're good words. Proverbs 12:25, anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word makes him glad. A good word makes him glad. Isn't it interesting that we aren't the first people to struggle with anxiety or depression? The ancients struggled with all the same stuff we struggle with. And one of the things that brought healing to them that still brings healing now are good words. Anxiety in a man's heart weighs him down, but a good word, the NIV says, a kind word makes him glad. What are these words? Well, these are words that are generous and gracious. So when you're with someone who's hurting, these good words are words that validate rather than minimize what they're going through. Words that show genuine care and concern. Words that seek to understand and enter into the pain. Words of curiosity, not criticism. More questions, less preaching. People who are hurting don't need lots of words, actually. What they need most of all is for us to simply sit with them. And then when the time comes, to say something like, I can't imagine what you're going through and feeling right now. It has to be so scary and frustrating and confusing. And I just want you to know that I'm with you no matter what. I'm not going anywhere. And I love you. What are those? Those are good words. Those are calm words. Those are gentle words. Those are kind of words that give hope to the hopeless. I'm not preaching. I'm not trying to get all the facts and all the information. I'm just trying to be there, to be present with the person who's hurting. Healing words are honest, calm, timely, and good. Now, you may be like, John, that's all great, but I never know what to say. I always think of what to say after the conversation. You know what I'm saying? Has that ever happened to y'all? And you may think, well, I'm just not good with words, you know? Well, that's okay. Most of us actually feel that way. I feel out of my depth all the time when I'm talking with people, especially people who are hurting. Here's the good news. We can learn to speak healing words. We can learn how to do this. Why? Because Proverbs says we can. Here's what Proverbs says. Proverbs says in 15:28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. So how do we learn how to speak healing words? The same way we learn everything else. We think about it. And we practice it. The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. They think about what they say before they say it. And that might mean thinking, sometimes all we need to do is think for like 3 seconds instead of just speaking. Sometimes we need to wait for like 3 days before we come back to a conversation while we think and pray and seek counsel. The righteous, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer. And as we think about how to do this and then practice it, we can grow in our abilities to speak healing words. The tongue of the wise brings healing. Life, death, and life are in the power of our tongues. Friends, isn't it amazing that God wants to use your words to accomplish His healing work in this world? Think about that. This world is utterly broken, in need of so much repair and healing. One of the primary ways we can bring healing to this world is through our words. Are you using words that heal? Do you ponder carefully what you say? Are you speaking honestly, calmly, timely, good words? We can do this. With the Holy Spirit's help, we can speak words that heal. Our words hurt, we know that. Our words heal. But thirdly and lastly, our words have the power to reveal. They have the power to reveal. You might say, well, reveal what? Generally, you say, well, you know, sitting here with my Bible, the Word of God reveals God. It reveals Christ. We come to know God through His words. We come to know Christ through the gospel. Paul says, apart from hearing, you know, they'll never believe. Faith comes from hearing, and hearing through the Word of Christ. And so God reveals Himself through words, which means, by the way, brothers and sisters, if you want your friends, your family members, your co-workers to know Christ, you will have to eventually find a way to open your mouth and commend Christ to them. They won't just come to Christ through your kindness. Words reveal Christ. And so we need to bring the words of Christ to people who need Christ. But what else do they reveal? In Proverbs, the main point of Proverbs along these lines is that our words reveal our hearts. Our words reveal our hearts. Solomon makes this connection. He says, for example, in 16:23, the heart of the wise makes his speech judicious and adds persuasiveness to his lips. Or the lips of the wise spread knowledge, not so the hearts of fools, 15:7. So out of a wise heart come wise words. Out of a foolish heart comes hurtful, wicked words. Wise words aren't the result of verbal skill, but rather come from inner resources of goodness and integrity. Wise words come from a wise heart. Derek Kidner again says, what a man says wells up from what he is. What a man says wells up from what he is. You might remember what Jesus said in Matthew 12? Out of the abundance of the heart, what? The mouth speaketh. Out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. So sometimes we say, I didn't mean that. And you know, I've said that. We're trying to make amends. We're trying to apologize to someone we've hurt with our words. And we say something to the effect of, you know, I just didn't mean that. But I would say, Jesus would say, no, you meant exactly what you said. You meant exactly what you said. Because what Jesus says is the things that come out of your mouth started in your heart. Out of the abundance of your heart, your mouth. So this is why it's not about learning verbal tips and tricks and just learning how to speak fluently and well. It's about learning to have a heart of integrity and goodness and righteousness. You might know this children's song, parents, called Good Fruit by the group Rain for Roots. I'd recommend and commend their stuff to you. We've sung this one particular song with our kids numerous times. I'm going to give it a go real quick. Please don't laugh. It's called Good Fruit. Apples don't grow on pear trees. Apples don't grow on pear trees. Apples don't grow on pear trees. No apples there, it only grows pears. Bananas don't grow on plum trees. Bananas don't grow on plum trees. Bananas don't grow on plum trees. No nanas come, they only grow plums. Your heart is where the words of your mouth grow. Your mouth is where the thoughts of your heart go. Jesus, teach our hearts to bear good fruit. Boy, no. That was rough. I like it when we sing as a family because I get drowned out. Do you see the song? Do you see the point of the song? Apples don't grow on plum trees. What grows on a plum tree? Plums. Bananas don't grow on, apples don't grow on pear trees. Bananas don't grow on plum trees. Whatever the tree is what it produces. So whatever your words are, whatever your heart is what your words will be. Therefore, as the song says, Jesus, teach us. To have hearts that speak good words. Teach our hearts to be good, to be wise, to be calm, to be honest, to be timely. Teach our hearts, Lord. Change our hearts. Why? Because our words reveal our hearts. What's in us is what comes out of us. There's this really difficult passage. I'll read it really quickly. In Matthew 12, same section I just quoted from, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks, where Jesus says something even harder than that, I think. Listen to what he says. I'm in Mark, Matthew 12, 36 and 37. Listen carefully. I tell you, he says, on the day of judgment, people will give account for every careless word they speak. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Do you hear that? You will give an account for every careless word you speak, and by your words you will be justified or condemned. What is he saying? Is he saying, okay, so if we speak good words, then we'll be saved. And if we speak bad words, then we're going to hell. No, that's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying. He's saying, as he's already said up above in verse 34, out of the abundance of your heart, your mouth speaks. What he's saying is, on the day of judgment, one of the perhaps primary ways your salvation will be clear is through the way you use your words. Your words will confirm your testimony. You will be justified or condemned. You'll be judged for every careless word. Every careless word. If we have a changed heart, then we'll have changed words. Ever so slowly, but eventually. You're like, John, I'm terrible at this. I feel you. I'm struggling. I'm growing too. If you have the Spirit of God in your heart, you will indeed start to speak words that will justify you, that reveal a good and pure and righteous heart. If you have Christ in you, words, good Christian words will come out of you. Do you see that? There's this other proverb where Solomon says, a soft tongue will break a bone. A soft tongue will break a bone. I said earlier that, you know, we need to speak calm words. Well, we also need Jesus to come in and speak soft words that end up breaking our bones. Here's what happens. Well, here's what I'm talking about. Maybe you've experienced this. If you haven't, I hope you will today. The Lord comes to us in kindness. He says, I know everything you've done. He comes into our house. He brings us into His arms. He says, I know everything you've done. I know everything you've said about everyone you've said it about. And you know what? He says, you don't have any right to live in my house, but I want you in my house. And my Son Christ spilled His blood to cover all that so that you can live in my house. So that you can live here, not just today, but forever. For all your days in eternity, you can live in this house with me forever. And it doesn't matter that you're still growing. I'm not asking you to come and be perfect. I'm asking you to simply come. Come as you are. You don't have to clean up your language, you know, wash your mouth out with soap and then come. He says, just come. Just come with all your filthy words. Come with all the ways you hurt others and yourselves. Come with all that. Come into my lap. Come into my arms. Come into my house. I want you to be here. And Christ, my Son, paid an incredibly high price so you can be here. Will you come? And you can come and you can stay and you can be here for free. If you've heard those kind of words from God, here's what happens. You go off to your room and you fall on your floor because His words broke you. His words broke you. Have Jesus' words ever broken your bones, friends? Do you understand that you deserve nothing from Him? Nothing. And He wants to give you everything. He knows everything. He's like, I know what you've done and I've got nothing but shed blood and everlasting life and grace for you. Just come on in. His tenderness ends up melting our hard hearts. His soft tongue breaks our bones. I wonder, friends, have you heard the voice of Jesus? Have you heard Jesus' words? Those kind of words, those honest. He's not lying to you. He says, you're worse than you think. And I love you more than you realize. Have you heard those honest words, those calm, gentle words, those timely words at just the right time? Right when you needed His words the most, they were there. And they were good words. Have you heard those words? Has it shifted something inside of you? So that now, out of your heart, in a surprising way, you're like, I don't know why I'm all of a sudden speaking so nicely to people, but here I am. I'm not as interested at work about gossiping about my boss and my coworkers. I'm here to serve. I'm here to work hard. I'm here to be a witness for Christ. I'm here for Christ because something's happened to me because of Him. Have His words broken your heart? Have you heard His words? Are they remaking your heart, friends? Are they remaking your heart? His words are the only words that can truly change our hearts. And when He changes our hearts, then and only then will our words finally, truly change.